Jen, is this the wonderful hotel that you're staying at in Austin?
No, I live here now. This is my
apartment. Excuse me, this is your bedroom. Very nice.
Yes.
No, this is the living room.
Who are the people on the wall? Did you select these pictures?
So that's Fenway Park. That's Bob Marley. That's an atomic bomb. That's Jackie Kennedy. That is a peace rally. And that is Thelma and Louise.
Would you say an atomic bomb, like testing in Los Alamos?
No, it was testing on the Bikini Islands.
The Bikini Atoll?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was in Cape Cod and I found all these pictures. So I bought them and framed them. So we've been carrying these around for like a decade and a half.
I like that it's a very startlingly accurate scrapbook of your brain.
I know, right?
I think the fact that you found them randomly, just if you were going to do one of those memes of like, describe Jen in 6 pictures, like I could probably do worse than the ones that you just pointed out.
It's true. And this one of Jackie Kennedy holding John John, my mother, who is from Massachusetts, looks exactly like Jackie Kennedy.
Well,
so that's one of the
now.
Reasons I love that picture is that my mom she looked like her for my whole life. In fact, in the 5th grade, I dressed up like Jackie Kennedy because she looked like my mom. So I love that picture probably the most.
Oh, what a heartwarming beginning to the show.
I know. So how's London, boys?
Fucking rainy. You want to know what? They should name this country sunglasses. What are they?
It's true.
Like you have no need for them out here.
I am not going to be lulled into a tirade about the wonderful weather that exists here in Britain.
Well, no one said anything about temperature. Are you against the concept of the sun? Like you would like to have a nice temperature, but also sunlight.
As previously
right?
stated, I'm not going to be lulled into.
Oh into my this. God! It's I was trying to be politically correct for you.
Good to be back here in London, and amazing that I get to be in the same room with Justin to record this. Who'd have thought that when we're both in a different country, we'd be able to do this?
I know. I finally get to Austin, and you two fuck off to go record together without me.
And we left. Yeah, immediately.
Yep.
We're like, girls, gross.
And then the other bit too is that can we tell her we're actually here for a volleyball competition? We're
it's
not even
mostly
it's,
volleyball.
It's just
centric,
a volleyball
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
I'm bumping. He's spiking. And boy, are we having such a load of laughs.
Yeah, it's great. Lots of sand.
Exactly.
Because
that's one
you.
Thing that London is known for. Beach volleyball.
Yeah. Beach volleyball.
In it?
Good old Wembley Beach.
No, we did have a very London moment today. We were walking to go get dinner. My wife wanted to get dinner. And so we heard chanting, loud chanting that I could not understand what they were chanting.
Was it Gregorian?
No, it was much in the way that you would imagine for some kind of football or sports kind of thing.
Right, right.
But I couldn't understand it. And I'm like, oh, I don't know whether that's British or another language, but... So we go to eat and we see a public park that is ringed with police. And I'm not even talking regular cop cars. These are sprinter vans just in case they need to quell a mini riot. And it was all fans of Sevilla FC, which is a Spanish
Go Barbers
football. Yes. A Spanish
the mascot's a scissor.
A Spanish football club that is playing a Champions League game against Arsenal. And what I had eventually deduced is that they were all gathering there at that park so they could walk to Emirates Stadium, which is apparently 2 miles away from the hotel, and I guess cheer on their team against
How
Arsenal.
Fun.
Tonight. So a very London event as we are across the street from King's Cross St. Pancras.
Yep. St. Pancras. He drove the snakes out of York.
Yeah. Yeah. London. The beer sucks, by the way. You know,
you're going to piss off all of England now.
You want to know what? They can get it. They
you know,
can
you know
get
what?
It.
Justin, I have lovely things to say about your island. I just got back from Sicily. I was on this time yesterday. I was taking a train up to Messina and I took a sleeper train from there to Rome. I woke up in Rome this morning. After a very not pleasant sleep. I don't blame anybody, by the way. That's just the travails of travel. and then flew to Gatwick. But yeah. I had a great time in
Sicily. But you had a great time in Sicily.
Yeah, wonderful island. Good
people. Did you want to regale the people about the distinct Italian desire to not put numbers or buttons on things? Okay,
let me specify. This is an ancillary complaint. This is an ancillary complaint to an otherwise joyful and industrious trip that I spent in Sicily. However, again, ancillary. Mm-hmm. Palermo is this, imagine a Baroque version of the cantina from Star Wars. It's this very, very rambunctious place, very raucous. The first night I was there, there's lots of four wheelers little zip coaches and things and kids doing wheelies. And then that's great because, you know, vibrant street culture, that's fine.
Sure.
And then ended up, you know, massive party going on till 3 a.m., which would have been great if I'd gone to it. But I was just trying to sleep.
Sure.
And I couldn't figure out which was my room because none of the buildings I went into in all of Sicily had fucking apartment numbers in them. You'd go in and it would just be, well, that's, you know, the Barry lives there. You're like, well, I don't know. But how would I know that? And this happened multiple cities. I'd go into a building and I'd try and figure out where I was going to go. And I couldn't figure it out because they hadn't. I don't know if this is a privacy thing. Surely they've been to other countries that have postal addresses. They must be familiar with the concept. But multiple times I'd show up and they, nope, you just kind of wander the floors until you find somebody. And then you look at them and then they could, you know, they'd see me with my British horse face in a bag and they'd figure out what I was up to and help me. Because, again, lovely people. But this was something that it always caught me off guard.
At least now you know the Italian phrase for who's this animated coat rack?
Well, did you ever figure out the vending machine that had no buttons or indication of how to get the food?
Now I want to clarify this. This listeners,
by the way, this was the entirety of our group chat over the last 5 days. Is Andrew Heaton being baffled by Sicilian?
I think it is Heaton versus modernity issue because at Gatwick Airport this morning, I tried to. The last thing I said in Gatwick was "fuck it." Fuck it, I'm leaving. I don't even want the coffee. So I think this is more of a Heaton versus vending machines things. Something's happened here recently, and I don't quite know what it is, where I guess you have to download apps for vending machines. I honestly can't figure this out.
Oh, so you don't, because everything is moving cashless.
Maybe. So you need yesterday an app to do a on thing. This ferry, I was like, well, I'm going to go to bed here in a minute. I'll get some Fanta. There's this really delicious pear flavored drink. I'll get some of that, maybe a bottle of water. And it's a glass cube. And there's a little shelf at the bottom for it to fall out when you've purchased it. There's no controls. There's no coinage. There's no, you can't boop, 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 E6. None of that there. And I stared at like the whole, I looked like a guy watching one of those magicians locked in a glass box. Just staring at it, trying to figure out what was going on. I still have no idea. I would try to talk to people, but I can't speak Italian and they could tell I was very worked up. That's all they could tell.
There was no QR code or anything.
Which, by the way, QR code. It brought you closer to them.
Yeah. No.
That's, because the Italians are kind of permanently worked up. If they're not very relaxed, they're permanently worked up. You know what, they're 0 and 60.
Great interaction with all the Italians that I hung out with. Yeah. Great interaction with the Sicilian. No, I was baffled by that fucking vending machine. It was a glass a glass cube with no means to communicate with it. It was a mute glass cube. And this happened multiple times. And every fucking time, every single rack is full to the brim. Because no one else knows how to get these things. So they're just taunting us with this food and drink that no one can purchase. And I don't get it. And I saw it in Gatwick, so it's not racist. This is an English thing, too.
Yeah. I like the rest of the time in Sicily, you just spent in a full suit and a wide-brimmed hat roaming the Sicilian antiquities like you just pulled one over on Indiana Jones.
You know what? I think I can pull off a pen in my hat. I think I can pull off a pen in my hat.
I think you really did.
Yeah. Thank you.
I think like there is a picture of you amongst the ruins of Sicily that looked like you should only be like checking a pocket watch only for there to be a cutaway of an explosion happening in another city.
There's no way Jones could survive that.
Exactly.
I'll just wander off and purchase some ruins.
From from London, England, I'm Justin Robert Young. Joining me is
Andrew Heaton.
And from Austin, Texas,
I'm Jen Briney, all by myself.
And we're not wrong. On this edition of the program, we are going to be talking about the one-year countdown to 2024, Joe Biden's poor polling, and a rejoicing for the Democrats. They might still have an issue that will push them to electoral success just yet. We go over abortion in the off-off year elections. Jen, despite the fact that it's way later here, you look more tired than either me or me. Are you? How are you handling?
Or we're bored of our antics already.
You might be bored.
Yeah, it's just morning. I'm just tired. It is what it is. I am an afternoon type of person.
This is what happens though, because you actually have to put on a brave face and come to my house when I'm recording, and I feel like that prepares you for facing the day in a way that just rolling out of bed and opening up the laptop seems to have left you unprepared.
It's one of those days that's been frustrating since the minute I opened my eyes. Like, I took the dog out for a walk. Joe's not here, so I took the dog out for a walk. She's being a total maniac. Someone had barfed near my building because I live in downtown, so of course there's random barf, and she kept wanting to investigate it. Like, so she was pissing me off. And then I come back into my apartment and someone, it sounds like it's right in the ceiling, someone is drilling and hammering, and I'm like, I record one day a week and I'm usually not even recording here, so what the hell. So I call the people downstairs and they tell me there's nothing going on upstairs, but there's something going on 10 floors below me and they think it's echoing. And I'm like, there's no way that I'm hearing something in my ceiling that's 10 floors below me. So their solution was basically, you're fucked. And I was like, okay, thanks for your time.
Hammering upstairs. There's not been a carpenter there in 20 years.
I know. It's like, it must be a ghost. I'm like, okay, I'm crazy then. And then this whole downloading of the Chrome.
Why, it was only Ed Catherine.
Yeah. So, and then I couldn't download, like, it's just been, I don't know if, you know, the hippies is Mercury in retrograde or some bullshit. Like, I don't know, but I've just had one of those
Mercury
days.
MercuryInRetrograde.com. Check that out.
Yeah. So I'm just having a day. So this is more just like exhaustion with the day than like physical exhaustion, because I'm physically fine.
Well, I'll tell you this. Mercury is going to be in retrograde for the next 12 months when it comes to the political sect, because folks, finally, we're 1 year away from the 2024 election. And it looks like our presumptive nominees both have some problems. A New York Times Siena poll, a battery of these polls, four swing states, show Donald Trump beating Joe Biden. Trump 52-41 in Nevada. Trump 49-43 in Georgia. 49-44 in Arizona, and the list goes on and on. They only have Biden up plus two. But of course, maybe it was because I was just in front of a bunch of Spanish football fans that I decided to have a lisp there. The 45th president of the United States, Donald Trump, spent his week on the stand in his New York City civil trial. He is defending himself against charges that he and his companies were misrepresented and thus could have affected bank loans. Now, these same polls that show Trump cruising in almost all swing states, they also show that many voters would turn on him if he were to be convicted in any of the various trials that are currently ongoing. So here's my 1 year out of 2024 challenge to the panel. Say something about the election that will not sound insanely stupid 1 year from now. This is challenge level impossible, but we're all going to see whether or not we can do it. Jen Briney, say something that isn't stupid a year from now.
It's pretty cool that our generation has a President Kennedy.
You know what? I defer to Jen completely. Jen, that was like that the thing in basketball where you put it through the net real hard. You did that.
Thank you.
You dunked it. There you go.
He's polling. I mean, you know how I feel about polls, but he's polling at like 24%. So It's not impossible.
Hello, Gary Johnson voter here. I'd like to talk to you both for a moment. What tends to happen with third party candidates is they do pull very well about a year out.
Yes.
And the closer you get to the oh shit moment, those people peel off. So there's a lot of people that are would be third party voters that will end up at the last minute going, but I got to vote Republican or I got to vote Democrat or whatever. So maybe, I mean, there's some very interesting things that Kennedy's doing that could alter the equation. But at least while I've been politically watching this, you know, post Perot, who was kind of his own thing,
by the way, was leading into the summer before that election.
Perot.
Really? In 92.
Was leading.
Look, there again. If we had the multi-universal theory confirmed and like Rick and Morty or any other science fiction slider scenario, I could go to exactly where we were in 1992 and have Perot not shut down his campaign because he was convinced that it was infested with CIA plants sent by George H.W. Bush.
Which sounds less crazy to me now, by the way, than it did.
I know, right?
I would be very curious to see how that election turned out.
Perot was the biggest third party election of our lifetime thus far. He snuck up on the Republican Democratic debate society thing, as we previously talked about, where the two major parties took it away from the League of Women's Voters. Both of their internal polling showed Perot's going to take it from the other guy. So both of them were like, yeah, let Perot debate, because they both thought it was going to end up hurting them.
By the way, did you know that the League of Women Voters was thought to be a total front by American communists by Walt Disney?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good enough for me. I'm glad the duopoly is running it now.
He had a lot of thoughts on who was an American communist. Anyway, Kennedy, you know, it's so funny. I was actually talking to the crew that does a great podcast, Stories of Our Times. It's basically the New York Times, The Daily, but for the Sunday Times here in London. And they just had an episode about RFK Jr. for likely the same reasons that you brought him up. And I will say to you what I will say to them, or what I did say to them, it's ballot access. I have no idea what ballot access RFK Jr. is going to have, because that stuff does not happen overnight.
It's difficult, and oftentimes they're trying to stop you. So yes, that like
not oftentimes, yes, all times
they're always trying to stop you.
At all times, you need to be dotting your I's and crossing your T's, and even then, there might be dirty.
I defer to the honorary Massachusetts in the room. What do we call you all?
Massholes.
But it's that's a real thing. I believe it's Massachusetts. I could be wrong about this, so I defer to you on this, Jen. But I think Massachusetts has a thing where you have to get like 10,000 signatures unless you were in the top two in the last election. So basically, the Republicans and Democrats don't have to go get signatures, but if you're a third party, you do, something like that. Does that ring a bell?
I don't know if that's specific to Massachusetts, but that's actually quite common, where the path is easier for Democrats and Republicans than it is for any outsider. And in fact, it's easier for Greens and Libertarians because they've qualified in the past. So it's kind of like they've made it really hard for those without a party to get onto the ballot. So Justin's right. It's a ballot access thing, but if he can get on there, I mean, I'm just kind of looking at the landscape. Like, you have Trump, who tried to stay president, and I think that's a bridge too far for a lot of people. And then you have Joe Biden, who the nickname Genocide Joe seems to be sticking. So I think there are people this time who in the past haven't been open to a third party who might give Kennedy a second look, just because a repeat of 2020, it just sounds so disgusting to, I think, all of us.
Can I pause you for a moment? I have not heard that phrase, Genocide Joe. Is that from
you missed it?
I've been abroad. I live in an echo chamber. All the things that you could think. That's because of his support for Israel?
For Israel.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the organized elements of the progressive left that have coalesced behind the Palestinian cause have demanded a ceasefire. There was a huge protest that happened last weekend where bloody or red handprints, so as to symbolize blood, was smeared all over the front of the gates of the White House.
Oh, that's what that was. Yeah. Okay, yes.
In fact, in London, there is a big, how cosmopolitan, just bringing up all these local London stories that, you know, are happening. There's a huge controversy because there's a massive protest that's going to happen here in London over the weekend that coincides with their, I think it's Armistice Day. It's basically their Memorial Day.
Right. Remembrance Day, I think is what they're calling it.
Whatever. It's probably spelled with a U. they, elements of the Home Secretary's office are so pissed off about it that there were conversations, outward conversations about barring the right to protest.
Oh, which, boy.
If you ever get mad about the great United States of America, and boy, howdy, are there problems, at least know that we're not at the let's have the federal government discuss whether or not you have the right to protest level.
With Joe, though, am I wrong in thinking that Joe is pushing the Israeli government to do a ceasefire in order for Palestinians to evacuate?
He is currently trying to push for a humanitarian pause of 3 days.
To get civilians out?
If that's possible.
Yeah. Like,
essentially, look, here's the reality of, you could say that Joe Biden needs moral clarity by calling for a ceasefire. I don't know if even the United States could affect a ceasefire in Israel right now. The reality of the pressure that that military, that intelligence agency, and that government is on to eliminate the people that caused that attack on October 7th is so great that I don't know if even the money of the United States could change it. Now, obviously, it is the point of the progressive left to say, well, let's try. You should be doing it no matter what. I don't know if that would materially affect anything. And obviously, there's a lot of elements to this going forward. But it has spread into American politics. Rashida Tlaib was censured in the House last night.
The only Palestinian member of Congress has been censured.
For putting out a video saying with chants of from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. And Hakeem Jeffries, the leader of her party and in the House, singled her out by name, saying that that phrase was divisive and not helpful. I think 22 members of the Democrats also censured her. So, you know, this is a coalitional problem for the Democrats. I don't know if it
affects.
I think
it's a big coalition problem for the Democrats. So, like, I would like to and hope to do a couple episodes where I am more plugged in on the Palestinian side of this. I'm hoping to talk to Justin Amash if I can. But as it is right now, we're just anecdotally, the people in my life tend to be Jewish more than they're Palestinian. So I'm hearing a lot more of that. And I have a lot of friends in New York that are Jewish Democrats that are really freaking out, not just because of the attacks going on in Israel, but also because they suddenly feel alienated from the Democratic Party. One would assume that the squad and people that are more on the Palestinian side would likewise feel that. But it's certainly not a lockstep thing within the Democratic coalition. There's a lot of wedge issue going on there.
Well, if you just look at electoral politics, though, in Michigan, there is a large Muslim community. And if you just look at the last month, the support for Joe Biden has plummeted. So, you know, whatever you think about what's going on in Israel and Gaza, it's cracking the Democratic Party in half, which doesn't bode well for their president. And then, of course, Trump is crazy. So it's just kind of like when I look at 2024, I'm looking at these two options and being like, I don't want either one of them. And I don't know who to vote for. And I just think that for a lot of people, a repeat of 2020, it might be just a fuck it, let's vote for anyone else situation. And RFK Jr. is at least a Kennedy. He's famous. He's married to an actress that a lot of people like. He's been on Joe Rogan. So you can listen to him talk for 3 hours. And, you know, because the thing that most people talk about him when they say he's a kook is vaccine stuff. But when you actually listen to him, he's saying that our government doesn't adequately enforce regulations when it comes to food and drug. And I agree with that. So I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to have a member or to have someone in charge of law enforcement who believes in law enforcement when it comes to food safety and pharmaceutical safety. So I'm giving him a look. That's for sure. Yeah. Because I'm very unsatisfied with these two options. I voted for Biden because I felt like I had to in 2020. I don't know what I'm going to do in 2024. And I don't think I'm alone.
He can also bench press more than the other two. Dude's a monster.
RFK.
Yeah. No, there's video of him like on Venice Beach, just like ripping him out.
Yeah.
So I've got an electoral question for you, Justin. Yeah. In terms of the relevant blocks in these swing states, the polling I've seen is that the youth vote is abysmal for both Trump and for Biden. That when you look like recent polling,
kids don't vote in general.
Okay. So they're not going to be a big turnout anyway. So that's not a big thing.
Those that turn out vote blue. But aside from winning a few counties in states that either you were going to win otherwise or don't statistically matter.
Okay.
They're not.
Well, then if we're discounting, the youth and we're going with, the
fuck these kids,
the largest voting block of people that are post 38 or whatever the age thing is.
Yep.
My guess is that, I don't know. I think that Democrats are so alarmed by Trump that they're unlikely to vote third party. But Jen, you voted for Biden last time. You're giving it an eyeball. But then again, I you're not a Democrat and you're not in the camp for them. Right. So like that every election is something that you have to make your mind up on, as for me as well.
In 2020, I've always been deeply disturbed by Joe Biden's foreign policy. He's no different from Hillary or really George W. Bush. I mean, I was pretty upset about what he did in Ukraine as vice president in 2014, which has led to the situation we're in now. So I've always been very worried. Okay. Thanks, Justin.
So I haven't heard a lot about it lately. I don't know. It just kind of disappeared. Now Zelensky's begging on Meet the Press, which is just like, it shows you how quickly this has fallen out of the mind's eye that he has to do direct press on with the new host of Meet the Press just to keep things in the center of our attention.
So fair points on Biden, Jen. I those are fair points, but for registered Democrats, I feel like the fear of Trump and antipathy to Trump is so high that I just don't see Democrats leaving. Now, granted, about a third of the country is independent, so they might, the people that might reliably vote Democrat but like to think of themselves as independent, perhaps they would go for RFK. But
here's my statement that I don't think will sound stupid. Donald Trump's going to be the president again, and it's going to be because of inflation. And here's why. A lot of the Democratic coalition is voters for whom have a lower income in general. When you talk about the black vote and the Hispanic vote specifically, I'm not a big believer that this is going to necessarily change because black voters or Latino voters are more inclined to support a Republican. I do think that if it's the economy, stupid is the number one commandment of any election. And when you are talking about inflation, jobs, not the economy, not the stock market, inflation, that it disproportionately affects voters who are either already in the Trump coalition and now will be more excited to go and vote, or persuadables for whom you can ask the age-old question that will be more true than it's ever been if this indeed is a rematch. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Because the guy that was there 4 years ago isn't just endorsing somebody. He's the other dude on the ballot. And for economic reasons, if you want a reason to hold your nose, you want a reason to say whatever about January 6th, if you want a reason to say he went 0-for-4 in his lawsuits and now he's been, you know, criminally indicted on however many felonies, saying, you know what? At least I could afford groceries when he was the president, is going to be a pretty compelling reason. And so if I'm going to make a bold statement that may or may not be stupid, that would be the reason why. Is I think people need to, when you look at these polling numbers, the one thing we know through history is that inflation kills presidencies. It has historically killed them. And if, you know, history holds, then that'll be the case here.
Well, and you know, what I was going to say is, even though I had concerns about Joe Biden as an independent on foreign policy type stuff, there is a factor that was happening in 2020 that is not going to be there now. And that's COVID. I mean, when I voted in 2020, I was locked up and I was watching the president basically dismiss the entire thing. And I wanted someone in charge who was going to get the vaccines out efficiently and end the goddamn pandemic. And so that's why I voted for Joe Biden. I thought he would be more responsible on COVID. It turned out that he was, but now it's been 4 years later and that's not an issue this time. And, but I do think that what happened after that election and the fact that the trial in Georgia hasn't even begun, I think the American people are going to learn a lot more about the 2 months between the election and January 6th, like that whole fake elector scheme. I don't think the American people understand it. I think by the time we vote, they'll understand it better.
After the January 6th commission, after we've covered it relentlessly.
The January 6th commission was 20 hours in the middle of the day. No one watched it. It wasn't covered well by the news.
It had prime time
We've
blocks.
Discussed it. We have 1,000 patrons, so let's not pretend that we're switching the election around. I do think there will be more awareness.
Fucking strays.
Sorry, man, but like we're not that big a deal.
So are you. Why are you hitting yourself?
I am a tiny podcast. So yes, I've covered it extensively, but I don't think the American people are aware.
But you don't think the media has covered January 6th enough?
I like to think of myself as a Lichtenstein of podcasts.
The January 6th commission, the media has covered the riot, but I do not think that people understand the fake elector scheme the way that I do, and the way that people paid close attention to. I don't think a lot of people paid close attention. And I think the trial being on television will change that. I also think he could be convicted of stuff by then. And polls do say that if he's convicted of stuff, then he doesn't. Because so it's just, we have two very problematic people, very old problematic people that no one's excited about. And I think that if there's any time that there's going to be people that look to candidates.
I agree. I think we agree with the premise of your statement. Here's the only pushback that I will have on that Georgia trial and any of these trials. They're too close to the election to be anything but team sports. It will be everything that will be pushed by the prosecution will be heralded as the absolute truth by a presidential campaign in Biden 24. And they're going to trumpet everything that happens from one side. Another presidential campaign will be playing to the public from the other side. And I don't know if it's going to be possible to really sway public opinion. That's my thought, especially if you just look at the numbers of every time he was rung up on charges, people liked him more. The core of the Republican Party liked him more, found it more important to support him. I don't know for sure, because there were some numbers that came out of those New York Times Siena polls that said, hey, if he's convicted, it goes the other way. We don't want him anymore if he's convicted. So in that case, you'd be right. But I think it's just as likely that if he's convicted, they say, no, he was wrongly convicted. This is a third world country where you were trying to jail your political opponents. And now we need to make sure that we right this historic wrong, at least in terms of core elements of the people that he has to turn out.
I think it's going to come down to how well this story is told. I think that if there is a really talented, famous director that puts something on Netflix that tells this story well in 2 hours, I think that that could make a really big difference. I don't think people understand the way that they tried to basically say he won 7 states that he didn't, and the extreme lengths that they took to do that. And I think that if that story can be told well in the next year, I think that could change things.
Famous director, history of Netflix. I got 3 words for you. Harry and Meghan. Heaton, what's your statement that will not sound stupid in 2024?
I'm gonna buy some time real quick. I want to go back to the third party thing. We brought up RFK Jr. Larry Hogan's making noise. Justin, do you think that...
I've never heard of him.
He is the
former governor of Maryland, blue state governor.
Which, by the way, have you guys noticed that the most popular governors in America are inevitably either Democrats in Republican states or Republicans in Democratic states?
Yes.
Like the governor of Kentucky that we'll probably talk about later this episode. Yeah. He was a Democrat in a bright red Commonwealth. Mm-hmm. Phil Scott up in Vermont, who for years was the most popular government in America, governor in America, Republican in Vermont. There tends to be this phenomenon, I guess, because they're not trying to piss off their entire population, is my guess. Larry Hogan's part of the No Labels movement, Jen. So he's there with presumably John Huntsman and the esteemed senator from West Virginia,
Joe Manchin. By the way, No Labels has made a lot of noise about how it would be a lot better. They view themselves as more efficacious if at the top of the ticket there was a Republican. So that would be
that would make sense, because I mean,
be there for Hogan more than Manchin.
I think that that makes a lot of sense. Biden is a much more traditional middle road Democrat than Trump is within the Republican Party. I know a lot of Republicans who view Trump as a third party insurgent character. So that makes sense. That being said, back in 2012, I knew at least one former governor that was part of another one of these proto no labels movements of kind of a centrist coalition. There ought to be a moderate centrist candidate, et cetera, et cetera. And from my read on it, as they got closer to the election, they either went, oh, there's not this really isn't viable. Or I think they just lost faith and went, we don't want to be spoilers. Yeah. Like this is one of the downsides to trying to get moderate pragmatic centrists, is that they're more likely to be concerned about spoilage than a firebrand third party candidate. So I don't think RFK Jr. will suddenly back down. And I don't think third party candidates should be doing that. But with No Labels, Justin, do you think they'll actually make an impact? Do you think they'll actually run? Or is this just noise to try and make noise for the sake of noise? And then hopefully the Republican and Democratic parties will pull back a little bit and they'll say the job is done.
No, I think they're going to make noise. Whether or not they will field a candidate, we will see. I heard some stuff behind the scenes that No Labels is specifically an inside the beltway fuck you job between various members of what used to be the Democratic coalition. Specifically,
not Never Trumpers, because that'd be kind of a smart move for Never Trumpers.
No, this is it's from the left, and that's why the Biden people are so annoyed with it.
Was it like a bunch of disaffected blue dogs? Like, who would it be? I mean, because Manchin would fit that bill, but like, who's angry at who?
Fuck it, Mark Penn. Mark Penn is the dude who's running No Labels. It's his wife that technically runs No Labels. It's Mark Penn that is doing it. He has long believed, and you know, came up through the Clinton machine, that the future of America is run through a centrist candidate, and that there is a hunger and thirst by the American people to have something like that. He has flirted with elements of the Republican Party. The people that now run the Democratic Party loathe him and would like to strangle anything he wants to do in the crib. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's happening. From that perspective, I don't think he's going to blink and say, oh no, will the Obama Biden machine be mad at me? Okay. Because they already want him dead.
So this is not five or six former senators or governors going, we should have a centrist party.
No.
And then as they get closer, go, well, we can't kick it to the Republicans. We can't
now
kick it to the
Democrats. Would Manchin back out? Would Larry Hogan back out? Would Chris Sununu back out? Would whoever like wants to do it, would they not want their name on something like that? Maybe.
The Republicans do make more at the top of the ticket, because like Larry Hogan, Chris Sununu, guys like that. Was Sununu a never Trumper?
He's
pro-choice, which I've already put him somewhat out of step with the party.
He actually staked his claim earlier in this cycle saying Donald Trump's not going to be. I'm not even going to talk about it. Because Donald Trump's not going to be the nominee. And then he kept winning and winning and winning.
I saw him at South by Southwest, and he was I enjoyed once more being in the company of such a politician. I do enjoy the artistry to some extent.
All right, so say something that won't be stupid. I mean, right now, you have some pretty stiff competition in the clubhouse, because I said Trump was going to win, and Jen said RFK Jr. is going to be the president. So like we've already staked out some pretty out there positions. I said Trump's going to win even if he gets four felonies hung on him.
I'm not good at the crystal ball stuff here. Like, it seems to me that the trend is getting worse of voting against a candidate rather than for a candidate. That starts back in 2016.
So we seem to be the nader. This is laying out for you.
Huh?
Back the guy who beat Trump the first time. Say he's going to go 2-0. And that shambling corpse is going to get right over.
It does seem the most likely thing.
And then he's just going to drop the engine right out of his chest. His entire heart, lungs, and rib cage are just going to fall out of his suit as he gives his victory speech.
I feel like I should pick. I should pick a VP for Trump then, shouldn't I?
Whatever's not going to sound stupid.
Who's is it? Is it Kristen Noem out of North Dakota?
Yeah,
she used to live across the hall from me in D.C.
Really?
I talked to her husband one time because I was like, "Hey, I'm Andrew. I live across the hall." And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "So what's your story?" He's like, "I'm from North Dakota." And I'm like, "Oh, great!" Like, and he's like, "Well, my wife works here in town, so I come to Prairie." But he was like, really, you know, low bone. Then I found out
they weren't like putting an upside down pineapple.
No, they didn't invite me over or anything like that, which is a shame because it would have been fun.
It would have been amazing to say that you.
How about
Kristi Noem's husband?
I'll go out on a limb and say Kristi Noem will be the Republican VP.
Oh, God, you're so lame. She said RFK Jr. was going to be president.
And you said, the front runner for a thing is going to be the thing.
It's not okay. I don't mind making a ballsy statement. It's just that I don't have any crystal ball that I don't feel like I've got any insight.
You certainly have no balls. That's true.
We're not talking about who I want to win or what I hope will happen or anything like that. We're just making predictions here.
Yes.
Am I making a prediction for the sake of being outlandish?
Yes. We're just talking out of our ass. You think I actually think RFK Jr. is going to be the president? Like, no, but I don't know.
Okay. Okay. Then how about this? This next election, for sure, third parties will get electoral votes.
No, we don't even believe you. You've already eroded your credibility. Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong is where you need to go to support this show and get a personal apology from Andrew Eden for not being more bold in his pundit takes. Yeah. Kirstie Noem's going to be the vice president.
Okay. All right. Fine.
No.
Sarah Palin will kill.
No, you're banned. You're banned from any kind of. You want to know what? You are just like the cooking here. Bland and dare I say useless.
Okay. Can I reveal something to the listeners here that I really shouldn't do?
Please do.
One of the things that folks in media, and we're all in media here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously no one listens to us like Jen pointed out.
one of the things that folks in media do, that's a really good trick. And they don't tell you this, but I'm going to tell you this is we'll make bold, audacious claims knowing that the media cycle moves so fucking fast mm-hmm. that you're not going to call us out on it. So like when you and I went to New Hampshire, Justin, I had a whole episode on how Joe Biden was done. Completely whiffed it on that. I was completely wrong on that, but like nobody called me out on it.
Because we were drinking with Chris Hayes at a bar in New Hampshire and we all agreed that Joe Biden was toast.
We all thought he was dead.
We thought he was going to drop out the next day.
Yeah. But no one remembers that stuff. But like let's say theoretically though, Larry Hogan's going to be president. And I just say that now. Right.
Yeah.
And it somehow shot in the dark fucking happens. Then I hang my hat on that.
You're a king for life.
Then you're a king for life. And no one ever goes, wait a minute. You said Bitcoin was going to be worth $1 million. You said that Quebec was going to secede from Canada.
Doesn't matter.
A bunch of things about how it turned out that I think I have said that Meghan Markle will break up with Harry and then eventually probably Harry will date Taylor Swift. This is a prediction.
Hopefully they get that January 6th documentary first.
Yeah. So anyway, I would be happy to supply outlandish prognostication.
It's almost like somebody built an entire fucking segment around that premise.
I just don't have any prognostication.
Okay. So outlandish even. Fully understanding they don't matter.
Yes.
You still can't muster.
Can you
one.
Give me a prompt on something specific?
Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong. This week on our bonus episode, we'll be talking about AI porn again. It's back. And this time it's going back to school. Fake nudes at a New Jersey high school has led to new calls for laws punishing deep fake porn. It's AI. It's porn. It's our favorite Patreon topic. And only you get it, dear subscriber. at patreon.com/we're not wrong. And don't worry, even if we get to like 3,000, 4,000 subscribers, Jen will still hand wave you. So don't feel bad. Don't think we want to make sure we stay so small that Jen can dismiss us. No. Please keep coming. We'll still be too small for Jen, no matter what.
The ego in this guy thinking that we're going to affect the election because we talked about...
Wait. No one ever said that. You said that.
I've got my outlandish thing now. Can I say my outlandish thing? I thought of something. All right.
Jen, what do you think? Should we let him say his outlandish thing?
I mean, he's so late. That segment is over, but okay.
Yeah, we're done. We're done with it. But no,
Donald Trump
go ahead.
Will be elected and convicted, and he will serve out his term as president in prison. That's outlandish by the confines of the segment.
I should have shut you off. All right. Two elections this week help us learn a little bit more about one of the longest standing issues in American politics, abortion. In Ohio, a referendum to enshrine abortion protections in the Constitution was on the ballot and won. Meanwhile, in Virginia, Republicans sought to take both chambers of the state legislature, with abortion being an issue that both sides wanted to talk about. Glenn Youngkin, the up till last night popular governor, had backed a 15-week restriction with protections for rape, incest, and health of the mother. Despite the fact that the Republicans went in with split chambers, they had one of the House and Senate and not the other one, they lost both last night on the abortion question. So, do these results tell us anything about our national conversation of abortion, or are they just local noise? Man, Andrew Heaton, what is your opinion?
I don't think they're noise. I think that that's a clear indicator that the American people are a lot more centrist when it comes to abortion than the political arguments around it have portrayed us the last few years. Now, where I do think that this is noise is I don't think that this is going to correlate with the presidential election forthcoming. This is an off-year election. It's an off-year election. And on top of that, it being an off-year election, the people that are participating in it are going to be smaller, more energized, and also, I think based on polling, more affluent. Whereas people that are less engaged and less that are less engaged and lower income are not participating as much. So I don't think that this means slam dunk for the Democratic coalition come the next presidential election. But what it does mean, I think, is a very clear signal that in swing states, and even if we go back a couple of years, like Kansas, I think it was, mm-hmm. That it turns out most people or a plurality of people in the United States are in favor of some amount of abortions going on. And that seems to be a winning thing for the Democrats. But also my takeaway from that, rather than it being so much an electoral thing, is that I view this as very positive, not only because I'm pro-choice, but because I think that from the get-go, this is something that should have been sorted out democratically. I did not think Roe v. Wade was a good judicial decision. And I think it created all sorts of unintended consequences electorally that we're dealing with now. So if anybody has a problem with a religious right, they cohered around Roe versus Wade. If anybody has a problem with the evangelical movement taking over the Republican Party, they found a home in the Republican Party post Roe versus Wade, because to their credit, and I think they were correct about this, this was not something they got to have a say in. This was something that was done by the courts. Justin and I are over in Britain, a recent member of the European Union, but I was just in Europe, right? In Europe, you find that countries democratically hammered this stuff out, just like we're doing right now in the United States, and they've reached a consensus on it. And that is what is currently happening in the United States, is state by state, we're figuring out what we're comfortable with, what the laws are, and it should have happened a long time ago. And it's happening now, and I think that this is moving towards us actually getting to a point where we're all kind of on board with where the laws are in a given state.
Jen, it is important to note that none of the votes last night were about restricting abortion. They were about either, on one hand, a promise from a Republican governor to be at 15 weeks, which I believe is 1 week longer than France has it. And on the Ohio side, it was about enshrining a right to an abortion in the constitution of that state. Very, very interesting for nerds. Ohio has a very slim, you just need 50 plus one to get something in the state constitution, which is pretty juicy, at least if you want to get something, made a law forever. Do you believe that this says anything about this national conversation?
I mean, this is a continuation of a trend. Pretty much every election we've seen since Roe v. Wade has been overturned has been in this direction of people at least trying to make abortion illegal in the first trimester. I do think that, like Andrew said, state by state, we're figuring out where the limit is on weeks. It seems to be falling amongst the reasonable between 15 and viability, which I did the research and the youngest fetus to survive outside of the womb is 21 weeks. So that's viability. And then if technology gets us to the point that you can survive at 17, 18 weeks, like then it would change, which is actually a solution I think makes a lot of sense, because that's when, you know, that little being is literally able to survive on its own. That is when I think it is a separate person. And so viability makes sense. That's what Roe versus Wade was. And so I do think we're seeing a process of figuring out the law state by state. There's definitely been a backlash in every state that's tried to ban it entirely or ban it so early that it's impractical to get one. So like, 6 weeks, a lot of us don't even know, our period comes every 4 weeks. And so if it's just a little bit late by the time you even figure out you're pregnant to have the deadline already be gone and it's only a cluster of cells, like that feels very unfair to a lot of people. So I think it's a continuation of something we've already seen. The electoral effect, however, like, do I think that this bodes well for Biden? Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm capable of looking at a ballot and looking at every question being like, Joe Biden as president and abortion are two different things. And so yeah. I will vote one way on this question and then vote for the president of my choosing. I don't know about that.
I think you're right about that.
Let me give you an example. In Ohio, Tim Ryan, a Democrat, ran on abortion and lost to somebody who had never run for office before, and J.D. Vance as a Republican, because Republicans are more popular than Democrats in Ohio. And then 1 year later, the issue ran
right
without a label on it, and it won.
Right. And the outpolling that I've seen is that what made the difference here was Republican, like Democrats were already mostly going to vote pro-choice.
Yeah.
The difference that pushed it over in these states was Republicans going, I am also pro-choice, right?
Yes.
So they were unlikely as a Republican to vote for a Democrat, but when it came to the issue, they'd vote for it.
Yeah. I think that this is politically efficacious. I think it's extraordinarily politically efficacious for Democrats. I believe that Democrats should be, if they want to win elections, be repeating, Republicans are taking your rights away. Have you heard about the way that Republicans are taking your rights away? And I don't just think that they should do it at rallies or on commercials. I think they should do it when they're ordering at McDonald's and when they are tucking their kids in at night. I believe that they should be repeating that over and over and over and over again. Instead of, let's say, for a random example, putting your name on the economy, which by polling is not very popular. I would say for Democrats, this is important. This is what voters have repeatedly told you they want you to fight for. Now, going forward, I think it's going to get more complicated. I think right now the Republicans are the party that caught the car and they can't really decide exactly how they are going to spin this. For Glenn Youngkin, I think he wound up campaigning on a fairly moderate solution.
Didn't he run based on like, parents own their children, not the state.
He won the governor's race on that. Mm-hmm. This time he's not up for re-election because of the way Virginia's system works. But this would essentially have been the like rubber stamp. We love Glenn Youngkin. We love him so much that we're going to give the Republicans both chambers of the House. They wound up giving him none. Mm-hmm. And that was him saying 15 weeks plus carve outs, which in my heart of hearts, if I were to put money on it, is probably where I think the mass majority of the country is going to end up in 10 years. Yeah. I think it's going to be around there. That 15 weeks would encompass, I believe, currently 98% of all elective abortions.
Vast majority. Yeah.
Like we're talking about edge cases.
Yeah.
And like when Jen's saying the youngest that was born was 21 weeks, that's an extraordinary outlier. You know, like the vast majority of this happens within a certain time period. Either the Republicans got to figure out a way to message that differently. They have to say we are for second trimester as opposed to 15 weeks, because I do think that there's number salad that gets in people's heads, and for them, 8 and 15 don't sound too far off. But, you know, when I did an episode after the Dobbs decision with my mom, and I told her literally the law that was proposed by Lindsey Graham and the pro-life people a few years ago, which was 15 weeks. I was like, oh, did you hear this? This just, was pushed by the Democrats. And she's like, well, thank God. Thank God. You know, because past 3 months, and that's what you see in the polling is like we are for 3.5 months. If you say 3.5 months instead of 15 weeks, I think that people look at it differently. Yeah. They feel about it differently. Now, that's up to them.
Well, they've also shown that like people don't understand when you talk about weeks, unless you've actually studied it, where the development is. So at 6 weeks, it is a cluster of cells that is just barely able to be seen. So, I mean, to call that a separate person is just kind of ridiculous to a lot of us. But once you get to the, you know, months into it, once you get deep into the second trimester and it looks like a person, you know, that's when it starts to feel differently. So I think there's also different terminology that we can use between cell clusters and fetuses, because they are different things. And by just talking about the weeks and not knowing, like, if you don't know, is this a cell cluster or is this a tiny person that can survive on its own? If you don't know where that is based on the weeks, then that also makes that conversation a lot harder. We need to talk more about what it is.
I think it's pretty clear that independents don't view the Republicans as honest brokers on this issue. That if Glenn Youngkin says 15, that there's a guarantee that it will stay 15 forever.
Yeah.
And that it won't go to 8 or 6 or 4 or 0. I think that that's something that Republicans got to figure out. Because right now, I would say that if Joe Biden wins the election, which I think is a 50-50 chance of happening, it's going to be on the back of stuff like this, that they're going to be able to work up enough anger about this issue and enough of a crisis point about this issue that they will get people out to vote, because right now that's what we've seen.
Well, and I do have to point out again that when I did my episode on the actual proposals that were put in actual legislation in the House of Representatives over the course of the last 10 years, the difference between what the Republicans were proposing and the Democrats proposing in legislation was a week. The Democrats were saying they wanted viability, which is 21 weeks, and the Republicans were saying 20. So they're actually not that far apart. This is more of a rhetorical thing than anything else. Although since Roe versus Wade has been overturned, then the Republicans are, like you said, it used to be 20 weeks. Now they're talking about 15 here in Texas. They want 6 weeks. So it's, you know, they have gotten more extreme, especially on the state level.
A lot of those were trigger laws. Yeah.
Yeah. But the national party has proven that there is a compromise point that exists with them. And I think that if the Republican Party doesn't want to get completely smashed on this issue, I think they need to get back to the compromise language, because this super religious stuff of it's a separate person from the minute that conception happens, I mean, I just don't think the American people buy that.
I think part of this is that this was used very much as a wedge issue very effectively for 40 years. And that if you were on the pro-life side of this up until last year, you could be coming at it from a very different perspective. So you could be saying, I think a fetus is a human from the moment of conception and all humans are sacred. Therefore, all abortions are bad. You could be coming at it more procedurally, which is like I was in this camp where I was like, If Roe v. Wade had been a law, I would have voted for it as a senator, but I wouldn't have affirmed it as a judge. Or you could have gone states' rights on it and been like, you know, why aren't we acting like Europe? Italy doesn't have the same, like Italy and France don't have the same regime in terms of abortion. But what united that whole coalitional pro-life movement was let's get rid of Roe v. Wade. And now that that's done and the governing side of this kicks in, that passion is lost because now it's like, oh, yeah, did you guys actually want all abortions outlawed forever under every circumstance? Or do you want to do that, but we're not going to count rape and incest? Well, no, because they're, you know, that doesn't detract from the human quality. Okay, but there's a bunch of people that do think that. And then other people that are like, I think kind of in the centrist camp of like, yeah, it's fine when it's not really, it doesn't appear to be a person kind of, I don't know how I feel about it, probably legal. And then it gets real late and we're like, no, that's murder. Like, I think that there's, the sort of monolithic opposition has now been lost and the implementation of it's not nearly as advantageous for Republicans as it was for Democrats.
I do think if we're going to put this into a presidential context, all of the evangelical lane candidates, Asa Hutchinson, Mike Pence, and Tim Scott, all proposed 15-week national laws that then you could go lower if you wanted state by state. And none of them have any kind of tread at all in this race. So that does not appear to be something that was a particularly successful. The most aggressive on abortion restrictions that is polling in any kind of way is Ron DeSantis, who passed an 8-week restriction in Florida. And Donald Trump has kept his hands far away from this, except to say that any solution needs to include
exceptions for exceptions, rape and incest,
because I desperately do not want to use the term carve out exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother, and has said that in very Trumpian fashion, I will just make the best deal possible. Everyone will come into a room and will leave with the best deal that has ever been dealt.
I despise that man, possible, because I don't think he's actually wedded to a particular side in this. Having followed Trump for a very long time, Trump cares about Trump, and for some reason, tariffs. These are the two things
that he's... 4 years. Like, that's the thing. We've seen Trump in action. He had 4 years to make this magical deal, and he didn't do it.
Yeah, because it wasn't politically advantageous to him. I'm not defending the man. What I'm saying is that I don't think that if President Mike Pence were getting sworn in, I think Mike Pence has very firm beliefs about abortion that would be non-negotiable cards at the table. I don't think Trump has any of those. I think that you could see Trump
about anything,
about anything, including this. I think you could see.
He certainly feels like he has repaid his debt to evangelicals.
Sure.
Evangelicals put him in the White House. He put a bunch of Supreme Court justices in, and he takes
a victory lap. He got Roe v. Wade taken out, yeah.
Every time. And he says, everyone promised you, no one delivered. Trump delivered. There we go.
But because I don't think that Trump in the year 2013 sat down and went, you know, I'm really deeply a pro-life guy. I don't think that that happened. I think that he got swept up.
Are you there, God? It's me, Donald. I'm just saying that I've had a revelation. Some would say the greatest revelation that I am a pro-life. It begins at conception, God. It begins.
As I do not think he thought that, I keep your eyes on him, because I could, like, in 2016 was a weird election. Like, 2016, Trump was running against Hillary using a bunch of, like, I try not to use left-right language, but he was using, like, progressive policy positions against her at times, right? So, like, she's the evil free trade person.
Yes.
I'm the person that wants to bring jobs back to America.
He tied her to TPP, even though she had abandoned it by that point.
Like,
but the damage was done. And that was something that the progressives had pushed her off.
That was previously something that the Democrats were more likely to attack the Republicans on. You could see him revise his position and maybe end up being like the abortion centrist candidate or something. I don't know. When he gets up there, it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I think the deal making thing would definitely be his angle.
Well, certainly is what he's going to say. Mm-hmm. And like, anything he doesn't have a question, an answer for, he's like, I'll have to look at it. Like, he's like a contractor that's probably going to overcharge you.
Yeah.
He's not going to, he's like, can I just take a picture of this? I have to come in. I just have to. It's $600, but we'll figure it out. I'll make the greatest deal. We'renotwrongpod@gmail.com. The King's Speech was read at the beginning of Parliament. We'renotwrongpod@gmail.com. Guy did the whole movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good monologue.
Time Lord writes, I would like to once again push my agenda for everybody around the world to use Zulu GMT UTC time. Now that we can communicate instantly with other parts of the world, this would simply simplify everything. Each geographic area or even business could decide when their business hours fall. The only tricky thing would be the calendar date changing midday in some locations.
Fucking love this. I think this is a great idea. I've had similar ideas myself. I think we should have two clocks, military time and o'clock. And if you're talking o'clock, you're talking about your local, that's 6 o'clock, right? But if you're saying 600 or 1800, you're talking GMT. I think this is a great idea. Let's have two different clocks. That way we can, we're record.
You just way overcomplicated this idea. Yep. This you guy is saying 1 clock, and 1 clock makes sense to me. Why do we need an o'clock and a military
fine,
clock?
Fine, fine. In that case, Time Lord, let's use the global military clock, 2300, all that shit. That would make, like, I have to coordinate enough guests now in different time zones. By the way, people in Eastern time zone never include time zone because they believe they're in the center of the world.
It's
they
so
never,
true.
Ever fucking do it.
Yeah.
I email people, hey, we're going to meet at 3 p.m. CT/4 p.m. ET. Do you know who doesn't do that? People in Eastern time. Let's just have a global clock. Fine. Yes. I'm all in favor of this.
I second that.
Hard pass.
Hard pass.
Because it gives the normal clock to these Britos.
Oh God.
I'm fine with that. Just as long as
they're the only one who get a normal clock. No, sorry. I wake up in early numbers. I go to sleep in late numbers. It's very simple. I like the way it is now. I'm not giving the only normal clock to the Britos.
You know, the French during the Revolution tried to introduce metric time, a 25-hour clock. That was one of the things they tried to do when they were doing all their fun French Revolution shenanigans. 25-hour clock. Thanks, France.
If you love the IRS so much, why don't you marry it, writes Jen, thinking that taking money from the IRS is some Republican ploy to slip more money into the rich just makes me think that she's never had to deal with the IRS. My wife and I own a small business that employs 1.5 to 2 people that aren't unpaid family members. After our first audit, I went from being a fringe member of 1 or 2 parties to solidly libertarian. After our second IRS audit, I wouldn't support one of the two main parties, even if they were running a Krampus Baba Yaga ticket. This was even before the IRS started hassling high profile people criticizing the government like Matt Taibbi.
I do have to wonder why you're getting audited twice, but I take a little bit of umbrage with being accused of never dealing with the IRS. I do pay my taxes every year. I am also self-employed. I have very weird taxes, and I've had to call the IRS, and I've actually found the agents to be very helpful. And if I were to get audited, I can tell you it wouldn't help me any to have no one able to answer the phone. I can tell you it wouldn't help me to go back to when they were understaffed and they couldn't help anyone with the audits or tax preparation or answering any questions. So defunding the IRS makes your auditing process a whole lot harder. So I think it's stupid on every level to defund the IRS.
I have something to say.
Go.
Krampus was a fine governor. And if we had voted for Krampus back in 92, none of this bullshit we're dealing with today would happen. And Baba Yaga has some interesting ideas.
I know. No one actually pays attention to Baba Yaga's early campaigns. He was actually really excited.
Baba Yaga was a Rockefeller Republican. Everybody thinks of him as rock jaw conservatives. Rockefeller Republican, for Christ's sake.
You guys have such a memory for random ass references, political references. Like half the time in the show, I don't know what's going on. And I have no idea who you guys just referenced.
Please don't fight, writes. Why is it that I can't bear to listen to you all disagree? There are no raised voices. There's no ad hominem attacks. I mean, you guys actually like one another and I can still not take it.
If you can't handle our disagreements, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, we're about as chill as it gets.
I think we're a necessary element of your media diet, dear listener, because I think you've become accustomed to the idea of disagreements being these very theatrical bullshit things that happen either on cable news or on Twitch or on the various different cut up social media elements of somebody destroys somebody else. And that, you know, for everything that people say about all the good that Jon Stewart did to the media landscape, I will never forgive him for normalizing that element of interview where you either had to be the, you know, speak truth to power, even if it's totally reducing the arguments to something so cartoonish and stupid that nobody gets smarter. This is how it should go, in my
opinion. Yeah.
It should go with people who either have varying levels of expertise, who like to kid each other, who like to disagree with each other, who like to move on and live to either have a better conversation the next time or have the same conversation the next time. It just matters that we like to have the conversation.
Yeah. Good?
Yeah.
Good. Fucking idiots. How about we go to the Andrew Heaton Sports Question of the Week? Hey, Heats.
Yeah.
When's the last time you saw a Wemby?
You know, it's been many years since I've seen a Wemby.
Yeah.
And I was
like, because there's been others out there, but it's been a while since we've like really seen a Wemby.
When I was a young lad, my grandfather would take me hunting and occasionally we'd see a Wemby. They're less profuse now than they were in my boyhood. It could be climate change. I'd like to think that it's just,
you were in France.
I'm not outside as much.
I didn't know that you were in France.
I grew up in Oklahoma and or Scotland, whatever I claim. And, you know, like you see a lot of wildlife and some of it got imported from France.
Well, that seems coded.
Yeah. That,
you know, the wildlife seems, that seems
the,
like
the last,
I'm going to push you off of wildlife. Just,
okay. We'll switch. Yeah. You know what? I carry the embers of Wemby in my heart and every,
he you is know, close to you. He when, is close to you. When we are back home, mm-hmm. he is close to you.
Oh, so it's not an event or an animal. It's a, nope. It's a person. Mm-hmm. Can you repeat the question?
When was the last time you saw a Wemby?
A Wemby.
A Wemby.
Which implies that, so is it like a, okay, hold on, wait. you know, the Wemby family has yes. given more
the to Wembenyamas
to sports in our country and the good people of France with their ridiculous 25-hour metric clock uh-huh. than so many other people. And anytime you see a Wemby, it's like seeing a float in the New Orleans parade. When you see that Wemby, you're like, I have seen greatness here. And I think that all of us will see a Wemby soon.
Hey, we got there. We got there. Victor Wembanyama, the number one draft pick of the NBA draft, is an absolute freak of a human being. He is like 9 feet tall, but he dribbles like he was a very small person. And he plays in San Antonio.
He's French?
He is French.
Huh.
He is okay. French. And so I think...
What is San Antonio's team?
The Spurs.
The Spurs. That makes sense.
Also, Texas. Like less than an hour away from us.
So the Spurs hired a Frenchman?
They did.
Okay.
That's
that speaks to the broadness of the Texan sports community.
They have a history of hiring French people.
Really?
The Spurs, yeah.
Huh, okay.
Tony Parker, one of their best players ever, French.
Who'd have thought?
French as hell.
Beautiful eyes.
Cake for Days writes, last episode, someone said store-bought ice cream cake is the best cake. Your show is false advertising. Clearly one of you was wrong. The best cake is Sodi Doces, a Brazilian cake shop in Orlando.
This is fake news. I did not say store-bought ice cream cake. Carrie's cake was just cake. The best ice cream cake is Baskin-Robbins. And I've never had your local cake. I'm sure it's delicious. But I don't get ice cream cake from Safeway. I don't even know if they have ice cream cake. And you don't want ice cream cake at a fucking wedding because that's just going to melt.
It's going to melt. And everyone's got nice clothes on.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You can just write an email that says, I was listening to you guys and you said, mentioned cake. I thought of this cake shop. Hmm. You don't have to put it into an adversarial element.
Yeah. Why you gotta be so mean?
We're not wrong. No. Google map where people add cake shops.
Add their own.
I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I do too.
Heaton Sports Pitch writes, I think MMA and more specifically the UFC would be a good first step for Heaton sports fandom. The last time you guys discussed this, Heaton expressed his inability to revel in the success of teams on the field. MMA is not a team sport. Fighters are individuals who Heaton, as a people person, might be better able to relate to with the aid of a number and behind the scenes of a number of behind the scenes documentary and YouTube series like UFC Embedded and Anatomy of a Fighter, which showcase the grueling training and hard work it takes to be a fighter, as well as a glimpse into their personalities and personal lives. Heaton, what is your natural inclination toward combat sports in general?
Listener, I appreciate that everybody's trying to get me to embrace my inner Wimby. And I do. And I want to be there. That being said, my natural inclination towards having sporting events of men beat the shit out of each other is one of slight revulsion and antipathy. It strikes me as a bit gladiatorial. The boxing thing where guys just wait. And you know, the gloves are not to protect the other guy's head. It's to protect your knuckles.
Yes.
They're just beating the shit out of each other. Mm-hmm. And they have, like with football, American football, you'll get these head injuries, but it's at least sort of incidental to getting the ball through the fork. And with boxing, you're trying to knock the other guy out. You're trying to concuss him.
That is inhumane to you.
You don't
find it enjoyable at the very least.
No, I don't. It doesn't really appeal to me. No.
Okay.
I think, like, but you know what? That being said though,
football, tennis
makes sense to me because like tennis, you've got like a personality out there against another personality and maybe they're representing a country. So like that, but if instead of playing tennis, they were just beating each other with baseball bats, I would have less enthusiasm.
I've never seen you more of a flicker of interest in sports than when I mentioned to you that NFL football is essentially chess.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That was the first time that I've ever seen you be like, whoa, maybe there's something I'm missing. I thought it was just a bunch of roided up dudes running into each other. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that there were strategy here.
Throwing balls through forks.
And I know they kick them.
Have you heard of ranked choice voting? Writes, I really appreciate the layered perspective the three of you provide. The discussion of primaries was absent any mention of what ranked choice voting could offer in this process. I realize both parties oppose it because it lessens their ability to be the ones who decide who will be on the final ballot. But few Americans understand the benefits and operation of ranked choice voting. You know, since nobody on this show has ever brought up ranked choice voting, I thank you, dear listener, for illuminating us on this subject. I think Andrew even mentioned in that segment ranked choice voting, and I shut him down because it wasn't about ranked choice voting. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with having a discussion of ranked choice voting. I have a problem with ranked choice voting zealots making every conversation about ranked choice voting. You guys are CrossFitters. You are vegan. You are Scientologists. It's not all about ranked choice voting.
Also, it open primaries.
Fix everything.
Open primaries would help. Ranked choice voting and open primaries.
Fuck you. Sounds about white, writes. Although y'all are not wrong about Iowa and New Hampshire being predominantly white, what relevance is that? Don't forget, Barack Obama won the Iowa caucuses and virtually tied with Hillary in the New Hampshire primaries. The only reason why a state's demographics would play into the primaries is with the implication that they are somehow racist. Unless I'm missing something, do we think that white people don't vote for not white candidates?
So as the whitest person on this extremely white panel, I would like to take this one.
Did I get dropped out of
the bracket? Holy shit, I know.
Wow, okay. Hey.
Well, I'm just looking at myself glow in this camera. I'm just like, oh, God. I think the problem with having super white states is that us white people have a very different lived experience from people who are not white. We don't really understand what it's like to be a minority in this country, and we weren't forcibly brought here to do labor for white people. And so there's also just over the course of our history, there are benefits that have built up for white people that have not built up for, let's say, black people. You know, wealth that's been passed down from generation to generation. So we have this very different lived experience. And so to have so much of our electoral process be chosen by states that are so white, we are having the whittling down of candidates happening based on the votes of people who are already privileged. And I think that's one of the problems with it. And that's why I would like to see more diversity in the beginning, because those states don't accurately represent the entire country.
Check your privilege, Iowa. Check your privilege.
I am more on the colorblind side of things, but I don't like the idea of there just being any particular block of people that gets to be the intro kingmaker, regardless of who the block is. So like, for me, it's more geographic.
You're just pissed off about ethanol subsidies.
I am fucking pissed off about ethanol subsidies.
That's all you should know.
Iowa and their goddamn ethanol subsidies that made the environment worse. They've increased carbon. They've made the food supply cost more for people in the developing world. Fuck Iowa. You shouldn't be allowed to be at the beginning of the race after all the harm you've done.
Which brings us to Primary Freaky Friday, who writes, imagine if Michigan replaced Iowa. Forget corn subsidies. We'd be fueling our car with wood chips.
You know what? Everybody gets a shot. As we previously discussed, I like the idea of if we're going to do that, like Justin makes a compelling argument that having a drawn out primary process allows for more entrants to the field that have low funding. I like that idea. What I don't like is permanent kingmakers. I like the idea of it skipping around every 4 years, and Michigan can take a shot at it at some point. Maybe we could finally dethrone ethanol subsidies, which have been harmful and counterproductive to both the environment and the developing world in terms of food supply.
I never thought I'd be more excited to hear you rant about ethanol subsidies, because I know you can't also rant about ranked choice voting at the same time. It just like I'll prefer ethanol subsidies. We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is Will Saddleberg. Jen, what's heating up on the dish?
I released my episode about our congressional and possibly even European plan to steal all of Russia's central bank's money that is parked in Western banks and give it to Ukraine. There was a fascinating debate about how to make that legal. And, yeah, so I give you the highlights of that, and it's one of the more bonkers episodes of Congressional Dish because it's so far off the radar. So yeah, I highly recommend checking that out.
Bunch of random money to go to going to Ukraine. I'll bet you it'll all end up where it's supposed to.
Yep.
I'm sure. What could go wrong with a gigantic pile of money getting thrown through the air into Ukraine? I'm sure it'll all every single cent will land exactly where it needs to. Eaton, the political orphanage.
On the political orphanage, I was recently in New York and I was hanging out with Gene Epstein, who runs the Soho Forum and used to be the economics editor over at Barron's and was very helpful to me when I first started getting started in this industry, just kind of being a mentor figure for me. And I invited Gene to do a bonus episode with me because we'd hung out and had lunch and I wanted to hang out with him more. And I was like, well, why don't I come back tomorrow? We'll do a bonus episode on my show and we'll do a Q&A with you because a lot of people follow the Soho Forum. And so I solicited, I think, 30 to 40 questions from listeners. And
were they actual questions and not monologues?
They were real questions. They were real questions. And Gene and I got through over an hour and a half, a grand total of one question. Through one question over an hour and a half. One of the listeners asked, can you give an example of trickle-down economics working in the modern world?
Oh, my God.
And we did an entire episode about the meaning of trickle-down economics. We got into effective tax rates as opposed to marginal tax rates. This is something people don't often talk about, but I think it's fascinating stuff.
Tell you what.
So
if put on the red panties.
Anyway, it's a chat about trickle-down economics over at the Political Orphanage with my friend Gene.
On PX3, the off year elections, what they mean and what they don't mean, specifically when it comes to 2024, even here in London. This is a fascinating way to cover this stuff because I went to sleep with votes just coming in. I woke up and everything was done and everybody had made all their takes on Twitter. And it was odd because normally I'm also contributing to things as they're coming together. And I'm watching the pictures slowly form and we weave our way through. But getting to watch or just walk in after the fully formed process had completed and everybody had weighed in, boy, were there some really stinky takes. And I had a really good time going through them this episode of PX3.
Doing media in Britain is like having a superpower. Like, because I'm over here during the summer, summers, right? So I'll wake up at like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
And I am hours ahead of everybody. Like, I'll dick around till noon. I'll just like drink coffee and read newspapers and hang out. And then I'll start doing emails. Everybody's getting them at 6 a.m. All the morning. I'm beating the morning people. It's great.
I'll tell you what. And also, all my political knowledge, they love to hear it, but they don't know all of it. So, like, they're too busy following who the chancellor of the exchequer is sacking or something like that, random nonsense that nobody gives a shit about. Meanwhile, I'm over here sitting on pure gold. I got to tell somebody about the Biden Where's Jackie clip today. And she was delighted to hear it, that Biden was signing a bill and tried to hand it to a dead woman. Like, they didn't even know that. Oh, God, maybe there is something to this country. I don't know. Maybe I should spend more time here. Till next time, this is your old pal, Justin Robert Young, for Andrew Heaton and Jen Briney, saying we're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.